ESPN 107.3 presents Wild at Heart, bringing outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. Wild at Heart, powered by Cowtown USA, Colton Steakhouse and Grill, J. Cook Fly Rods, The Outdoor Superstore, Shady Lanes Cabins and Motel, Advanced Performance Shooting, Missouri Trappers Association, Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, and State Farm agent Michelle Beckett. Now, here's Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome to Wild at Heart, right here on ESPN 107.3 FM in the Pulse of the Ozarks, beautiful Rolla, Missouri. Hi, I'm your host, Bill Cooper, member of the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame, and in the studios, that good-looking Jerry Cook, co-host. Yeah, he laughs. It's only a joke I'm going to tell all day, Jerry.
Okay.
Also, we got that great sound man, John Francis. We're thankful we got this guy. He keeps us operational and out of trouble most of the time.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
Great fun. But welcome to Wild at Heart. We are red-blooded Americans who remember and cherish our outdoor heritage. We love America and support the Second Amendment. We stand for a national anthem, say please and thank you, and open doors for the ladies. We hunt, fish, trap, shoot, float, camp, and explore in God's country, the Missouri Ozarks, right out your back door, and occasionally a few points beyond. You can join us each week on Wednesdays at 4 p.m. right here on Midmo, ESPN 107.3 FM, or catch us Sundays at 8 a.m. or on www.espn1073.com. This segment of Wild at Heart is brought to you by J. Cook Fly Rods. Custom fly rods for everything you need for fly fishing, located in Salem, Missouri. And Harvey's Alley Spring Canoe Rental, located on our crystal clear Jack's Fork River. Well, hey, we got a special guest, Jerry, today that's going to be on the phone with us, and that's Randy McPherson with Whitetail Fever. Randy, are you on the phone there, buddy?
Yes, I am, Bill. I'm delighted to be with you, gentlemen.
Well, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you here. You know, that title, Whitetail Fever, kind of revs us all up because, you know, our Missouri bow season is rapidly approaching.
Be here before we know it.
I know it.
Well, Randy, where is it you hail from?
I hail from Wisconsin. My home state is Wisconsin. It's kind of my roots. And, you know, it's just the opener of bow season is just around the corner, and I'm starting to want to rub my head on trees already.
Well, if I took my cap off, it looked like I've been rubbing on trees for a long time. Jerry, you don't need to laugh too much.
I still got hair, man.
It's thinning, though, and extremely white, but at least it still does have hair. But, Randy, you sound like a young fella. Can I ask how old you are?
Well,
maybe it's just the accent.
You know, I have a face for radio.
We all do.
I'm a young 62.
62, really? Well, you sound much younger. You really fool me. But hey, believe me, that's not old. That's not old at all. You know, I'm crowding at 70.
Bill, I feel really young, and I still feel like a 20-year-old for the most part, except when I look in the mirror and I get out of bed in the morning.
You just need to get a different mirror.
That's right.
You figure that one out, let me know, because my ego could use a boost as well. But you know what? My co-host sitting there next to me, Jerry Cook, I think he's 71 years old too, but we still act like kids at this because we love the outdoors. There's just not much more in our lives that creates much more motivation than talking about the outdoors or being in the outdoors. And, of course, we're having a lot of fun talking to a lot of folks every week on a radio show about what they do in the outdoors. And you've got a really good thing going here. And I want to tell folks right off the bat that they can see you. Come visit Saturday, August 18th from 4 to 8 p.m. at Grace Church. That's on South 63. And I think, John, the 12,000 block?
Yeah, it's right before the fairgrounds and the left side of the road as you're heading out of town.
So it's easy to find.
Right.
Okay, so be sure and come out, folks, because this is going to be a great, great time. And we'll try to cover this several times during the show, but they're going to have some great prizes and things to give away. T-shirts, going to give away some bows, game for the kids. Of course, Randy will be the guest speaker, and a barbecue dinner. It didn't get any better than that.
Oh, no, that sounds good.
Hey, you get to eat, have some fun, and listen to some good deer hunting stories. But, Randy, let's get a little bit of your history back up in your life a little bit. What is it that you love most about the outdoors?
Well, the outdoors is something my father introduced me to literally as a 5-6-year-old. I remember him taking me in the Wisconsin woods in the fall, I was tagging along with him when he went bow hunting, and I had my little fiberglass bow, and I remember feeling so dangerous.
I was dangerous with a fiberglass bow.
I remember having one of those as well.
one of my little friends has a scar to prove it.
Well, and I remember poking my cousin in the butt with one of those arrows. It took us a little while to learn our hunter safety training, but fortunately nobody got injured bad.
Exactly.
And there was something compelling about it. It's sort of like, I think God has made within all of us that hunter or gatherer instinct. And I remember even as a 5-6-year-old, I just took to it. It was just something that I instantly fell in love with it. And I remember, just doing. I remember doing everything I could to get ready for the season. I remember making my own arrows, and then ultimately later making my own bows in high school, just for the chance to be in the woods. You know, I don't know. I feel sad for those who have never woke up and gone out in the woods in an early. Morning sunrise and smell the aroma of the woods as the whole world comes alive in that environment.
You're giving me cold chills.
Absolutely.
You hit the nail on the head. And that's the thing that all of us have in common, you know, is the appreciation for what God has created through nature. And I think there's a deep understanding there that we slowly develop over the years, and it just keeps better and better and better, that appreciation factor. But, Randy, I got to tell you, I was hunting bears with my bow by the time I was 5 or 6 years old.
The teddy bears?
No, real bears. I'm telling you, there was an old man. I'm from Southeast Missouri in the Cypress Swamps down there, and there was a bayou in the south part of our place. An old man lived across the bayou there, and it was quite a trick to get across the bayou. You had to run across the log, not fall off in the snakes, which I did more than once. But I was headed somewhere way away from the house, and I was about 6 years old, and I went by old Henry's house, and he stopped me and asked me what I was doing. I told him I was going bear hunting. So he reported that to my dad that I was out hunting bears. Of course, I never found one, so but I was hunting bears at 6 years old.
There you go. Well, what I love about the outdoors, Bill and Jerry, is that it teaches young people life lessons that will serve them well throughout their whole life. It's not just about the hunting activity. It's about what you learn in that activity. It teaches you to sometimes slow down and observe the world around you. A lot of times we're so busy and we rush through life, and it teaches us how to slow down and just pay more attention to what's going on, to be a better listener, a better observer, and to put those skills into practice. A lot of times, you know, they say people they listen to respond rather than listening to understand. I think the outdoors teach you great listening skills. I think it teaches you how to assess the environment you're in and make appropriate responses to that. And it prepares you for some amazing life skills that will serve you well all of your life.
That is exactly right. Are you a teacher by any chance?
No. But,
you should be. here in Missouri, and it's true in a lot of states too, because there's so many outdoor educational programs that are available anymore, but our conservation department provides materials, I think, to third grade teachers, and they teach a lot of basic conservation issues and ethics and all those sorts of things. And it's great to see that because, you know, we didn't hear anything about those sorts of things when we were in, particularly in grade school. I remember when I was about the 8th grade, we did have a conservation agent come in one time that scared us all to death.
we thought
he was there to arrest us.
Yeah, I think in our time, though, our fathers are the ones who really took that role of teaching us conservation. And as Randy pointed out, he was hunting when he was 5-6 years old. I'll never forget my first hunting experience was dove hunting with my dad.
Exactly. But see, that's something we we've lost over the generations. And, you know, after all these millions of dollars spent on programs just a few years ago, some national organization that puts out studies every 5 years indicated that, hey, we got all these fancy programs going on, and some of them are not working because kids need to be taught by family, whether it's father, mother, uncle, cousin, whatever. But kids also have got to make multiple trips for it to stick. But, Randy, let's get back to you here. What are some of your favorite passions, your outdoor activities that you like to participate in?
Well, I think to what I like to encourage men and women who are outdoors people to do is, if you want to enjoy the outdoors at a whole new level, introduce people, share the outdoors. You can't share it with 100 people, but you can handpick. And, you know, there are so many young people that are just waiting for a good, responsible, mature adult to invite them to experience fishing, hunting, camping, hiking, you know. And I, you know, I've shot some nice trophy animals, and I've hunted and fished in over 30 states, 4 Canadian provinces, Alaska, and all the way down to Africa. And all those are wonderful experiences. But what really sticks out in my mind is, in recent years, is I have helped probably 30-some people get, and a lot of those young people, get their first deer with a bow and arrow. Those are highlights for me. I even helped a 62-year-old pastor who was just waiting for someone to ask him. And I took him and I sat with him and watched him get buck fever and shoot his first buck.
You still get it at 62.
Year-old man, yeah. His name is Dr. George Miller. This guy's got a doctorate behind his name. But you see him experience the passion and the excitement and the thrill of being in the outdoors with God's amazing creation. It's just beyond description. And I feel bad for those who have not experienced, gentlemen, but we have over our lifetime. And there's a lot of people out there now, just they're waiting for someone to get them away from the video games and the virtual reality, experience the reality of what God has made.
Exactly. Well, Randy, boy, we're up on break time here already, so don't you go away. We're going to hear from a few of our sponsors, and we'll be right back with more from Randy. I'm Bill Cooper.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, right here on ESPN 107.3 FM. And if you're driving down the rainy highway, be careful and take us home with you. You can listen to us at home too, Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
Glad to have you. But this segment is brought to you by Cowtown USA, home of Can-Am ATVs and UTVs and living the dream outdoor properties. It's not just land, it's a lifestyle, and we live it. Hey, Randy McPherson, you still on the line? You didn't run off and go bow hunting, did you?
I'm still here, Bill and Jerry.
Hey, glad you're here, man. And Jerry has whitetail fever. And once again, he's going to be down at the Grace Church on South 63 in Rolla Saturday, August 18th, 4 to 8 p.m. And Jerry, Randy, I'm going to let you tell us about what's going to go on down there. You can probably tell it better than we can reading off of a pamphlet.
Well, we have a great sportsman's event. We have a lot of activities for the kids, shooting bows. And I represent Matthews Bows. My brother, Matt, owns Matthews Bows, the largest archery company in the world. And I'm going to be telling this amazing story behind Matthews Bows, how God takes very ordinary men and women, and if their heart's in the right place and they seek Him, that they can accomplish things that they never thought they could. It's a really, truly an amazing God story. I'll give you a little prelude to it, but my brother gets dreams in the middle of the night about bow and arrows, and I will tell you more about that story.
Sounds fascinating. Good teaser.
And we're also going to be giving away some amazing bows. We're going to give away a Mission Hyperlite crossbow. It's a full crossbow. It comes with not only the bow, but the case, the quiver, and it comes with the scope and some bolts. They don't call them arrows. They call them bolts. So for those guys and gals who have a bad shoulder, this is the perfect alternative. We also are going to give away a Halon 32. This thing is a smoking hot bow, one of the best-selling bows ever in the world. And then for the youth, we got what's called a Craze 2, which can be adjusted to fit the young person as they grow. And so if you're in the, if you have an interest in getting some of the best bows made in the world, then you should show up this Saturday between 4 and 8. And because we're going to be giving them away, and I'm going to be telling some entertaining stories, and we're going to just have a lot of fun, great food. And I love telling, you know, some of the values and benefits of what we all get to enjoy by being in the outdoors.
Well, I can tell you, Randy, you're going to have some great supporters there, because there are a lot of bow hunters around this part of the area. And we got a couple real nice bow shops pretty close by. And these guys have lots of clientele, you know, and they've just been going nuts in the last month selling all that archery equipment. Plus, they have 3D shoots all year round. So lots of bow hunters in this part of the country, and I encourage everybody to come out, because we all like to hear a good bow hunting story. And, of course, getting to hear the story of Matthews is going to be an incredible story in itself. Now, I got to ask you, Randy, the name McPherson, wasn't there a line of bows called McPherson at one point?
Yes. In fact, there's still my brother started McPherson Bows.
I wondered about that.
And he had a couple partners, and it ended up, the partnership ended up not working well, so he sold out to them. And then several years later, he said, well, I used my last name on the first bow company, so I'm going to use my first name.
Now, that's so ingenuity.
It's not real complicated, you know. And he ended up buying the McPherson name back, and a lot of the monster super speed bows that he's made has been under the McPherson brand.
Now, I got to ask you, though, am I revealing my age by asking that question about McPherson?
No, actually, a lot of people have asked that. You know, a lot of people are curious, how come Matthews has risen to the top and stayed at the top for so long? And it truly is an amazing story that isn't about how great any one person is, but it's about how great God is. And, you know, the outdoors is very compelling evidence. I mean, you look at the creativity of God. I mean, how can anybody doubt the existence of God by spending time outdoors?
I've asked that question many, many times, and I actually ran an outdoor ministries for youth program for a church organization for several years. And, I've asked that question many, many times, and and there's no better place than the outdoors than to, you know, see and enjoy the creation and come to an understanding about what has happened, what's taken place, and what is taking place in the outdoors today. But a big, big part of it. But, Randy, boy, we're really going to be looking forward to it. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there just for the barbecue, if nothing else.
Well, I'm interested in the story of Matthew's
Bowes. I am too. And I'm sure I'm going to take a lot of notes, or may even sneak a recorder in there, because this makes some good story material beyond the radio show here, Randy. So we're really looking forward to it.
I like to joke that my eyes aren't brown for nothing. I'm full of it.
Well, most outdoorsmen are. You know, of course, Jerry sitting next to me here, he's a world famous fly fisherman. You know, and nobody tells tall tales like fishermen.
Well, I just got back from fishing the Lake of the Woods. We are actually in the northwest angle of Minnesota, but would take the boat into Canada fishing muskie.
Oh.
And my 10-year-old grandson landed a couple of 40-inch muskies. And, you know, everywhere, I mean, that's what I love about the outdoors. You go see things and experience things that I just feel bad for those who are locked in a concrete jungle with their personal device attached to their body. I recently walked in New York City. I was down there for a couple of business meetings, and literally people bump into you because they're so busy texting, they're oblivious to the rest of the world.
Well, people are dying on the highways every day, too, because
Absolutely.
Of that. And, yeah, this is something we all deal with. And those of us who have had, you know, an outdoor lifestyle, of course, I've never lived within a city limits of any place, and been very fortunate to have been raised on a family farm and enjoyed the outdoors from the very beginning. I knew from the time I was just, you know, 7 or 8 years old what I wanted to do with my life, and it's panned out very, very well. I've been active in the outdoor communications business for almost 50 years now, Jerry. It only seems like a couple of weeks. I've had some great times, got to meet very interesting, unique people from around the world because of being involved in the outdoor communities. But, you know, you get to do a lot of other things as well. I've tied some of it into mission trips and that sort of thing. And boy, it's been a good ride, is all I can say.
Yep. I understand that one completely.
Well, I'm sure Randy does too.
Well, I think, you know, the good Lord has always meant for us to never be all about us. And the outdoors is so much more fun when you share it and you communicate it. And, you know, I'm very fortunate because I have several companies of my own and a bunch of real estate partnerships, and I sit on several nonprofit boards. But when I hang around true outdoorsmen, this is the finest people in the world. And I remember, sometimes in business, you take people golfing to build, you know, business relationships, and that's good. But you take somebody duck hunting, you take them fishing, or you take them, you know, pheasant hunting or whatever, it's a bond. It's a bond of the brotherhood. And the closest relationships in my life are because of the outdoors. You know, in the Midwest, in Minnesota, Wisconsin, that the opening of deer season is a bigger family gathering than Christmas or Thanksgiving for many families. Do you know that?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of traditions surround camps. A lot of people have annual deer camps, annual turkey camps. And I can remember the day when they had annual rabbit hunting camps and squirrel hunting camps as well. Now, those have kind of gone by the side. I managed sometime to get a guy or two to go with me. We'll stay for days and pursue those activities. But one of the greatest things, Randy, that I enjoy about it, and I'm sure you do too, is just the stories that are told around a campfire. And we have some tremendous authors from the Ozarks. One of my favorites who passed away just 3 or 4 years ago was Mitch Jane. This guy... actually taught in a one-room schoolhouse, you know, down in the Ozarks, and actually taught children that spoke Shakespearean English, and he recorded a lot of their stories, and just a jewel of a man. And Randy, I want to mention a book to you that you might be familiar with called Last Child in the Woods by Dr. Richard Love out of Kansas City. It'd been 20 years or so ago now, and he identified a group of symptoms through 20 years of research that collectively he called nature deficit disorder. If you haven't read that, and get your hands on it, because it'll certainly help you in your programs. A lot of great advice there. Well, Randy, once again, I'd like for you, we got just a couple minutes left here. If we've left anything out that you need to get on the radio now, now's the time to do it.
Well, you know, recently I had invited several youth to my farm in Wisconsin, and we spent the day hiking and riding four-wheelers, shooting guns and bows. And I remember at the end of the day, a young teenage boy looked up at me and he said, "Randy, thanks for hanging out with me because I don't have a dad." And it kind of broke my heart. But I realized how many kids are out there looking for a good adult role model that can believe in them. You know, they said the most important, I read a study that the most important thing a kid needs to hear from his father is not, "I love you." That's important. But the words that "I believe in you." Mm-hmm. And so many kids mm-hmm. do not have a father figure in their life believing in them, just like we talked about how our fathers introduced us to the outdoors. I'm very grateful my father's still alive, that my father, he not only introduced me to the outdoors, he taught me how to make a living and a business career, also taught me how to play the guitar. And so I'm very blessed that I had a father that taught me the important things of life. But there are so many kids who don't. And my challenge is, don't be a father figure just to your own kids and grandkids, but be willing to be a father figure to those who don't have one.
Yeah, that's so very true. And we're all thankful for our fathers, especially those that help introduce us to the outdoors. Well, Randy, I hope to see you Saturday, August 18th. That's this coming Saturday, 4 to 8 p.m. at Grace Church on South 63 in Rolla, Missouri. And that's Randy McPherson with Whitetail Fever. So, folks, be sure and come out and support Randy. Hey, hear a good message. Have a chance to get some good prizes, kids' games, and, of course, Jerry. You'll probably, like me, be there for the barbecue.
Absolutely.
Great fun. We hope to see you there. I'm Bill Cooper. We'll be right back in just 3 minutes with Mr. Ray I.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Do me a favor before I'm gone. Love this land. Pass it on.
Welcome back. Came back with a little pass it on. Very important to pass on our family tradition of the outdoors and hunting. This is Ray I. You're listening to Bill Cooper's Wild at Heart Radio. Have a special segment here, special feature, a one-on-one with a fellow Legends of the Outdoors National Hall of Fame member and an icon in the outdoor industry. Today we have Mr. Cuz Strickland, Mossy Oak, with us, and we're going to talk about the history of Mr. Strickland. And hello, Cuz.
That's a scary thought. Number one, I think I should be interviewing you instead of you interviewing me. I always feel weird when I'm getting interviewed by Ray I, Turkey Hunter's Bible. I mean, the guy who I used to look at up on stage and stuff. It feels a little odd, but I'll do the best I can. So.
You'll be just fine. My friend, you'll do great. Hey, let's go back to your roots, the love of the outdoors. Where it all started for you? Everybody has some place they start.
Well, my dad was a big outdoorsman, but it was 95% fishing with him. He was a lifelong military guy. He spent his life in the Army. And so he finally settled in there, southern Mississippi, Natchez is the town I grew up in. But he was a big fisherman. He fished me out by the time I was like 15. I was just done. He didn't hunt a lot. Now we would go periodically, we'd go on a rabbit hunt with one of his buddies, or maybe a couple times a year, we'd go to the Homochitta National Forest. Is where I grew up doing any hunting. And he would deer hunt a little bit, but I loved the hunting way more than I did the fishing. And my older brother, he loved the fishing more than he did the hunting, but something just snapped with me. And man, I got a buddy when I was around 13, and he was 15. He already had his driver's license, and he liked to hunt as much as I did. So I learned the Homochitta National Forest probably better than anybody. So it all started with me out there on what we call the Sandy Creek Wildlife Reserve. And I was just bit by that bug.
Growing up, did you ever think you'd be making a living in the outdoor industry?
Man, I never dreamed about being in the outdoor industry. Somebody told me one time that passion trumps everything, and I believe that, because Lord knows I don't have any kind of formal education in the outdoor stuff, but I had a passion for it. When I see somebody breaking into the business now and doing this, I was like, if they got enough passion, they'll make it. But I never dreamed about working in the outdoor industry. My dream was to have a job where I could make enough money where I could continue to hunt and buy the good stuff. You know, I never had the good stuff when I was growing up. I never was able to get a Browning VAR or the best tree stand, any of that stuff. I always dreamed about having enough money to do that. You know, back when I was a kid, there really wasn't that much of an outdoor industry. Same way with you. I mean, there were sporting goods stores, and of course you had the big brands, Remington and Winchester and stuff like that, but there was no outdoor industry per se when I was growing up. So no, I never had an inkling. It was just kind of divine intervention that kind of placed me where I went. Here's what happened with me. I was working. I was like everybody else. I got married young. I found the prettiest girl in Natchez. Couldn't believe she went out with me. So we got married very young. I got her to say yes, and I said, man, I ain't doing anything. I'll never do better than that. I had a great job. I was working at a warehouse called Riverside Central Services, and it was a huge deal. We stored all kinds of stuff, and it was 5 days a week, so I got to hunt on the weekends, and all of a sudden that job just ended. Like, they closed everything down. Well, I went to work the next day in a sporting goods store. I said, I can do that until I find me another really good job, because I was always up there anyway. I'd go up there on my free time and help them rig bows and put scopes on guns. It was just, you know, I was just infatuated with all aspects of that. So I called him. He said, yeah, come on up here, man. It was a good time of the year. So I started rigging bows. And while I was working at that sporting goods store, I was selling turkey calls for Will Primos, who was at the time still making them out of his house. You know, he just had one or two mouth calls on his head. The first camcorder came into Natchez, Mississippi at a Sears and Roebuck, and a buddy of mine bought it. And we immediately camouflaged this thing all up, and I was out filming turkey hunts with it, because I was just fascinated with filming a turkey hunt for whatever reason. And at some point, I sent a VHS tape up to Will Primos and said, hey, man, we're using your calls. Check this out. We killed some turkeys. And the next thing you know, he comes down to the sporting goods store with this giant TV camera that he had bought from a TV station. This thing was gigantic back then. Wanted to know, could I film a turkey hunt with that? He'd already done his little audio cassette, which was pretty cutting edge at the time of an actual turkey hunt. And anyway, I took that big camera and tried my best to learn how to use it. And the first spring I used it, I got maybe $5 or $10 a day and 8 cents a mile is what I got for my efforts, which, you know, that wasn't much money. I managed to film a couple of hunts with it. And first thing you know, I'm working for him full time with this gigantic old TV camera, and people can't really get their hands around it, especially some of the young people. But back then, if you got video of anything, it was earth shaking, you know, a turkey's head behind a bush. Oh my God, you know. But this thing weighed like close to 90 pounds when everything was on it. The tripod was made out of wood on the legs and had a lead head. The camera had a cord to plug into a recording deck that had 3/4-inch tapes that were huge, and it was just the logistics of getting it through the woods was a monster. Filmed the first truth tapes for Will Primos, and that kind of got me started in the business. And in the midst of all that, there was a lot of travel. My kids were little, and that didn't work out. I went back to work for the sporting goods store at the same time. I was still going to film for them, but I went to the first SHOT Show that Toxie Hayes ever went to from Mossy Oak, and my wife was with me. She actually saw their booth. She come and got me. She said, there's a couple of guys here. It was Toxie Hayes and Bill Sugg, who's still Bill's first employee. He's the president of the company. They had a little booth way down in the dungeon, about 10 feet across, and she took me down there, and I saw that Mossy Oak bottom land. I went, wow. I mean, I knew from a distance that was pretty special. Anyway, I went and talked to them, ordered some, and was fascinated with it. You know, they were home state boys. And I went back and I started calling all my friends in the business and saying, you need to get some of this because nobody else has it. It's cutting edge stuff. And I started selling. And Toxie called me one day and said, dude, you're selling more than we are. So I went to work for Toxie Hayes, and I think it was like January of 1987 is how I landed at Mossy Oak.
Man, I'm loving this. I'm going to pour me another cup of coffee. I'm getting some goosebumps here, cuz.
Yeah, I can take the Mossy Oak story on further.
Oh, yeah, I know you could. I mean, we could go on forever and ever and ever. But as you were talking about that, the kids being little and the travel, man, can I relate to that. Oh, my gosh.
I know you.
You sound like you were talking about me. Yeah, we could go on forever. There's so much more we could cover and so much more we could talk about, cuz.
Yeah.
We only have so much time on radio. Maybe we'll have to do this again and continue this later on. But I would like to ask you, because I get this all the time. It used to be, how can I become an outdoor writer? Then it became, how can I be on television? A lot of, how can I be on television? And I get it all the time. How can I get into this business? What do I need to do to get in this business? I get asked that a lot. I think we probably all do. So how can I get into the outdoor industry?
I get asked all the time if people want to get into the business. You see a lot of young guys, and they're like, what classes do I need to take at college? Do I need to do wildlife biology? There's so many young, and that's good. You know, you can look on my Instagram deal when you get into the insights, but I got some pretty big numbers who follow me, and 86% of them are young guys between the ages of 18 and 30. So I get a lot of questions about how can I get into the business? What do I need to do? And you're going to think I'm lying, but this is the story I tell them. I said, I give them a lot of advice. I said, first, you make yourself just irreplaceable to your boss. I said, be careful and pick somebody who you really want to work for. Make sure it's a passion. And I said, and then always be the go-to guy. Always be there. Be willing to do, you know, whatever it is. Mop the floor, do whatever. And I tell them the story. And I wasn't there, but I had two buddies that were there about an outdoor writer son that this guy named Ray I put on in Missouri. And this guy went and got like two couches and hauled them out to this rig and made coffee on the day before turkey season opened, had those riders sitting on those couches, listening to those turkeys gobble, sitting on the couch, drinking coffee. And I was like, if you're willing to do that to go to the next level, you'll be successful beyond your wildest dreams. And I promise you, I've told that story 10,000 times. That's commitment. You know, there's a lot of difference in how people think and how people put forward a big effort. But if you're willing to go to that level, you will separate yourself from the pack so fast, and success will be within your grasp. True story. And you know it's true because you did.
Yes, I do. It was so much fun when we did that. We put them in the couches. Yeah, those guys still talk about that. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good stuff.
That's a good example right there of how to be successful.
I want to thank you, Cuz Strickland, for taking the time. It's an honor and a privilege, and we thank you very much, my friend.
Well, it's an honor to be. And again, I feel like I should be interviewing you, and one day I will. And thank you for being a guiding light and one of the turkey hunting outdoor mafia in my life, Ray. You're a great American.
Thank you, Cuz. Appreciate it, my friend. You take care of my brother. Hey, if I haven't told you lately, I love you.
I love you too, brother. Thanks for everything.
That was my one-on-one with the one and only Ronnie Cuz Strickland. Now we're going to pitch it back to Mr. Bill Cooper, Wild at Heart Radio.
Well, thank you, Mr. Ray. Hey, it's great to have Cuz Strickland on the show, one of the Mossy Oak guys. He's one of the old guys, too, Jared. Goes way back. But hang with us, folks. We're going to be right back in just 2 or 3 minutes with National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Famer, Mr. Kenny Keiser from Kansas City. I'm Bill Cooper.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source for information about what's going on in the world of outdoor recreation in the Ozarks and points beyond. This segment of our show is brought to you by Shady Lanes Cabins and Motel in Eminence, offering you a comfortable night's sleep after a long day on the river. Remember, you can always listen to Wild at Heart anytime you want at our website, ESPN1073.com. Just click Programming and Wild at Heart. Welcome back to Wild at Heart, and welcome to the oldest living outdoor rider in the world, Mr. Kenny Keiser. How's that for an introduction, Kenny? Did I get it right?
Hi, Billy.
Keiser, now you hail from over around the Kansas City area. Are you on the Missouri side or the Kansas side?
I am on the Missouri side. I'm over here on the good side.
I thought sure you were a Jayhawker. Maybe that was Jay Walker, more like. I've seen you at a few conferences when you didn't walk well at all.
Oh, you're telling me. Hey, did you have a BBQ sponsorship there I heard a minute ago?
I don't know, John. We have a barbecue sponsorship?
We had Dickie's Barbecue, you heard, yeah.
Dickie's Barbecue.
I'm going to tell you something, man. A guy walked up to me on the street a while ago, and he said, "You know, sir, I'll give you $100 in November if we can tie ropes on you and float you in our Thanksgiving parade." So as much as I like barbecue, I'm going on a diet.
Oh, Kitty. You better stick to writing, man.
Yeah, I know.
Hey,
I'm going to be an undertaker this weekend at a festival in St. Joe, Missouri.
You're going to be an undertaker?
I am. They've got me all dressed up like an undertaker, and I'm going to be walking around asking, "How are you feeling today?" I'm going to be an 1880 undertaker.
Wow, that sounds dangerous, man. Of course, you have an acting history. You were in a Shepherd of the Hills play for a season or two, weren't you?
For a day or two.
Oh, a day or two. You only last a day or two.
acted about half silly around Silver Dollar City a time or two. You know, I've done a little theater here and there. I enjoy the heck out of that.
Well, you are rather dramatic.
Well, I enjoy it, but nobody enjoys watching me.
Well, I thought you looked pretty good in the overalls down at Silver Dollar City.
Those overalls, that's down home. That's where I came from.
Well, you know, if you need to go on a diet, but you're not going on a diet, overalls are a good thing to wear.
Yeah, they sure are.
You can kind of cover it up, you know.
Mm-hmm. I know one old boy that tried wearing a girdle until his wife found out and wanted it back.
That's probably your cousin. But
hey, it's one of them.
One of them. Well, Kenny, I want to talk about something that's rather important, I think. You had a book that came out several years ago about the huge floods we had on the Missouri-Mississippi River. What was the title of that book?
The Great Flood of 93, Revisiting an Epic Natural Disaster.
Yeah, and didn't the legislature adopt that as their state flood book or something like that?
No, they were going to, but they never did.
Well, shame on them.
He ran through session about twice, and I never heard anything more about it. I guess they didn't. But
well, we should all call our representatives.
Because this book I wrote is pure history. I had a lot of help in gathering up a lot of information, and boy, I tell you what, that was one serious piece of water coming in. Do you know what causes the flood, Bill?
Lots of water.
That's right. Now, you know how the lots of water came to be?
No.
Well, in 92, an equatorial volcano in the Philippines called Mount Pinatubo blew up and threw dust up into the stratosphere. That cooled the earth down, and El Nino, in the meantime, is throwing water up into the jet stream, which further cooled the earth down, and it all moved into the Midwest. Well, we had a wet winter in 92, and then on top of that, we had just torrential rains for days on end, just like 30 days straight. We'd have ungodly amounts of rain, 4 foot or something like that in a short period of time. And all that rain ran off into the tributaries, and the tributaries fed into the rivers. And that's how that's how the 93 flood came to be. It went bluff to bluff, and it's the 500-year flood. It's by 2.5 feet, it's the worst in history.
Wow. Now, we also had a tremendous flood in 95. Which one was bigger?
Well, 93, and the 011 was closer than 95. But the 011 was 2.5 feet less than 95. Now, that's what they tell me. I don't understand that because the towns have flooded. But I'll tell you what, on the Missouri River, the federal and the private dikes all failed up and down the river. And when it did, all the water went out into the fields. Well, that drove food prices up around the world for a good many years. But what it did do was save some of the towns, like downtown Kansas City, for example, and places like that. If that water had all made it down, it would have been a heck of a lot worse than it was.
Well, I imagine so. I didn't realize all the history behind that. I blamed it all on concrete. You know, we keep covering things up with concrete and asphalt, and water runs faster and gets to places quicker and stacks up in some places. But that's interesting, the history. I didn't know volcanoes and jet streams and all that had anything to do with it. You educated me today, Keezer.
Actually, I thought snow melt had something to do with it too, didn't it, Kenny?
Well, yeah, because it was a wet winter.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. In 93, that totaled over $20 billion in damages, 50 lives lost. But if this same thing happened right now, it'd be $32 billion instead of $20 billion because we're inflation or whatever the heck it is. But, it 30,000 jobs were lost, 17,000 square miles were flooded in Missouri. It was bad news, baby.
It certainly was, and of course we all remember it particularly. I was working in the area of the Missouri River at the time, working for UPS, and you couldn't get anywhere. You know, I'd drive 50 miles out of my way trying to get to one little farm, then have to backtrack to get to the next one. Made for some long days, I can tell you that. But I was tempted.
Got down a little bit of everything, didn't it?
Yeah, but I was tempted to carry a fish gig in the truck with me because, you know, all the ditches and the fields that were flooded. I saw lots of rolling carp and that sort of thing. I grew up gigging fish in backwaters, you know. So it was tempting, Jerry.
Well, I know
Jerry.
You did.
Yeah. Well, what else is going on in your life, Keezer?
Oh, not a great deal, besides being an undertaker in my book. I'm doing a big book signing in Parkville this week. Hey, incidentally, at the end of the thing, if anybody wants a copy of that book, I'll tell them how to get it, if you don't mind.
Tell us right now.
Okay. You can write me, Kenneth, K-E-N-N-E-T-H, Keezer, K-I-E-S-E-R, Post Office Box 901-414.
Say that again.
Kansas City.
Say that.
901-414.
Okay.
Kansas City, Missouri, 64190.
64190. We got it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You bet. And I hope you get some sales off of that, because that is a very interesting book. Do the libraries have it, Kenny?
Some do. Some do. And we're hoping all the libraries have it eventually, because it's history.
Oh,
a lot of the high schools have it in their libraries, too.
How much is that book, Kenny?
Do what?
How much is that book? How much do we need to send to you for a copy of that book?
For a soft copy, it is $23, and that includes postage, handling, and tax. And for a hard copy, it is $33 for, again, including all the other stuff.
And what kind of commission do we get off of sales?
Yeah, my dearest gratitude and friendship. For about 35 years.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Kenny, what else is going on that's exciting over in the Kansas City area in your outdoor life?
Well, I don't know about Kansas City, but I'm kind of ready for dove season open and go out there and see if I can actually hit something for a change.
We're all in the same boat on that. We've been kicking dove season around on the radio station here for the last few years. There have been some real confessions made right here in the radio station, you know. I couldn't believe the number of shots my co-host talked about shooting, trying to kill a dove.
I truly do believe that they're acrobatic. I think they do flips and flops in the air, especially if I'm shooting at them, because there's no way on earth I could miss some of them birds.
Yeah, I wonder if those doves actually practice that stuff right beforehand. But I can tell you this, you know, my wife works for Olin Brass out of Cuba, Missouri. They used to be associated with Winchester. Jerry and I are so bad at dove hunting, they're moving some new facilities to Cuba, Missouri, making the brass, I think, again for Winchester or something. so we're going Maybe we'll have lots of shells to shoot, you know. But
Would not be surprised. You know the thing about a dove is, I hunt with a lot of guys that like to eat them. I have just never cared for them.
Oh, you're not doing it right, man.
Oh, they're good eating.
And that may be. Yeah. I like duck. I don't care for goose. I like duck.
You are messed up. But with the doves, try taking the breast out, marinating them in Italian dressing overnight, wrap bacon around them, throw them on the grill. If you don't like the dove, you can eat the bacon. But another way to do it. Now, you would like this. Take the breast halves out, not the whole breast. Just take a little knife and scoop that little breast half out. Throw it in beer for about 2 hours, and it turns it white. Sucks all the blood out of it. Then roll that in flour, your favorite seasoning, drop it in hot grease, let your deep frying, and boy, that is one fine hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah, another thing I like to do is stuff them as well, you know.
That's a lot of work, though.
Oh, it's a lot of work, but it's good eating.
Sounds. When are you going to make some?
As soon as I go dove hunting and get a bunch of them.
Well, that's how we do trout. We stuff those trout.
Yeah. Well, back to the doves. You got me intrigued now with the dove hunting situation, see, because I grew up dove hunting. That's one of my favorite things to do.
Me too.
Now, where do you dove hunt around your part of the world?
Anymore, I used to hunt up by my farm up by St. Joe, Missouri. I have a family farm up there, but nowadays, we've got some great conservation areas, and they plant for these birds, and the birds do go in there. Exactly. But, you know, one of the big keys that the average hunter can do, like me, except for I'm a low average hunter, but one of the big keys they can do is they can drive around and scout. Now, that scouting is kind of a fun thing because you got your air conditioner on, and you got something to drink, and you got something to munch on, and if you're young and not ugly, you can take your sweetie with you. You know, that's just the kind of stuff you get to do, you know? I mean, and then you take your binoculars out and you find the doves. You figure out where they're at, then you ask somebody for permission.
Well, I did figure out one thing during this conversation. I know why you always got a male hunting friend with you then.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean,
Kenny, I can't believe it, man, but we're out of time here. We got to go to a break, and I appreciate you being on the show, man. But don't kill all those doves. I'm Bill Cooper, and we'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. I'm co-host Jerry Cook, and this segment is our show is brought to you by Advanced Performance Shooting in Waynesville, offering classes on firearms use and safety. With me this evening is Carolyn Parker from River Run Outfitters in Branson, Missouri. Welcome, Carolyn.
Hi there. How are you today?
Just fine. Trying to stay dry up here. How about down your way?
I worked hard at staying dry today, too. Loved every minute of it.
How's the fishing been down on Taneycomo?
Well, you know, it has been exceptionally good, I think, especially for this time of the year and all the heat we've had, low water conditions. I'm really pleased with the fishing right now.
What are they hitting on now? Midges, scuds, streamers?
All of the above. Honestly.
Well, that makes it easy, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I could go down and catch fish.
Come on down and catch fish. I bet you could. Depending on where you are on the river, you know, scuds are working good in the upper part, especially around the hatchery and the outlet.
Uh-huh.
Go a little further down, and the midges are working today, yesterday, well, almost every day this week. We have a black copperhead midge early in the morning, and then the ruby too, is if they quit hitting on that one. And streamers. Remember the old 56er out of Arkansas? You familiar with that fly?
Yes, uh-huh.
I think the guy, Tom Nixon, created that. That has been working exceptionally well the past couple weeks. You know, not every day, but it's one of those, you pull it out of your box and try it.
One of those patterns they haven't seen in a while, you think? Or
That could be. They're going, what's this? It's been working.
Well, see, this is my theory anyway, Carolyn, is that a lot of times the pattern that's most effective is something that they haven't seen before or haven't seen in a long time.
And I think that's the case many times. I get tired of seeing the same old.
Yeah, go ahead, Carolyn.
We've got one pattern we've probably been using consistently for 3 years now called the JQ. And it works almost all the time, but the other day it wasn't working. Out of the box came the 56er and bingo. But, you know, the JQ is still working intermittently with that one, too.
Yeah, the last time I fished down there with Gina, you were calling that pattern the CQ streamer at that time, and I think it was a tan-colored pattern version of that was working well that day.
Could have been, yeah. And we were probably calling it the CQ then. We finally decided to name it after its namesake, the gentleman who created it.
Yeah. Well, I know it's an effective pattern down there, along with some of the other patterns that you've mentioned. And I have people in my shop all the time, hey, what's going on at Tanicoma? What's working down there? And I just tell them, hey, these patterns, you can't go wrong.
Midges, cracklebacks, and streamers.
Oh yeah, yeah, and cracklebacks in the trout parks around this area are a staple, if you will.
It's one of my. I don't go anywhere without patterns. I don't care where it is. I've got a crackleback in my fly box.
What sizes are you using, Carolyn?
If I'm stripping them under the surface, I'm typically using a 12.
A 12.
And we tie that on a heavy hook so that it doesn't bend when you set the hook. If I'm, fishing at subsurface or trying to fish it as a dry, anywhere from, 16, 14, those all work well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, it sounds like you fish the crackleback much like I do, Carolyn. You just let it get wet and fish it just below the surface of the water.
I do that, but my most productive way is usually using a sink tip, either depending on the water speed, a 1.5 to 2 inch per second, or even as much as a 3 inch per second sinking leader, and getting a little sucker down even deeper. And a lot of times we'll trail them behind, a couple feet behind another streamer, such as the JQ or the Tiger Tail or the 56, or we'll just run tandem streamers.
Now, you were talking about using a sink tip line. Have you tried the Rio Versa leader?
That's what I use all the time. I think they think I'm smoking Versa leaders.
Well, I tell you what, it's
great.
Yeah, it's something that I really push in my shop now for people who want to get down deep without having to change fly lines. And as I tell people, it turns your floating line into a sinking line.
Yeah, at a fourth the expense.
Exactly.
And two-thirds the trouble.
And there's the big thing right there, is that you can do it quickly.
Yes, yeah. And in these tailwaters, you know, you could go out one day and you have no generation, which, by the way, for those people who like to wade, our generation pattern has been nothing in the morning since Memorial Day. So you're able to get out there and wade until noon, 1 o'clock almost every day. But back to my sinking leaders, with all the various levels we've got because of the generators, you know, we can go from 2 inches per second. Generators come on, we'll let the water clean up, and we're down to 5 or 7 inches per second with our leaders.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about it.
Well, then that's exactly right. That's the really neat thing about the VersaLeaders is you don't have to worry about changing lines. You just change the leader for the sink rake you want to use.
Yep, exactly.
Quick and easy, no muss, no fuss, as I always say. You know, so.
Yeah, and again, a lot less the cost.
A whole lot less, yes. But, you know, you were talking about the generation rate or schedule down there. My buddy and I had hoped to get some fishing in down there during the Branson Fly Fishing Expo, but, gee, they were generating till 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, we were in the expo all day. I bet it was off in the morning.
Yeah, it was. And, of course, we were in the expo, you know. So
you can't win them all, Jerry.
We had it off for the folks, yeah.
Yeah,
the folks
yeah.
who want to fish during the daytime.
Yeah, but, you know that I think is a good show. And, of course, it's always a pleasure to visit with you and your crew when we're down for that show. And I think it has the potential of becoming a really nice show, a big show.
I think it does, too. I think they've got their focus right. You know, they're really trying to focus on kids, which is awesome.
Right.
And getting a better variety of stuff out there for the people.
Yeah, the variety and the focus on kids, I think, is really a good thing because, after all, the kids are the future of our sport.
You better believe it. After us gals, it's the kids.
Well, you know.
Probably before us gals, it's the kids.
We're not getting any younger, Carolyn.
Okay, you don't have to preach to the choir.
Yeah. Well, fishing is supposed to make you younger. I don't know about you guys. I get younger every time I go.
Uh-huh.
But, Carolyn, I got to ask you a question now. You guys were discussing a couple minutes ago about changing flies and changing often, you know, if something doesn't work. And I'm sure you have your favorite half a dozen or dozen flies or so, but I listen to Jerry all the time talk about having 900 patterns of flies inside his shop. Of course, he's a distributor as well. But how many patterns do you have in your shop? Is it necessary to have 900 patterns?
<That's funny. laughs> Let me answer this one.
I was expecting that one. Okay,
yeah,
that was no surprise.
Yeah, now that gives you lots of choices. And now I have done probably a couple dozen fly boxes. I have a lot of flies on hand, you know, and I've spent a lifetime just trying to learn the names of those. Many dozens of flies that I have, you know, and I know them one week and forget them the next, except for 6, 8, 10, 12 that I use on a real regular basis. But, you know, I was down on Taneycomo, when was that, back in February, they had a Conservation Federation media event down there, and I was down there at Lily's, and I was fishing with Chris Nelson out of his big boat, and one afternoon he whips out this, it was like a number 20 little mid sort of thing, and golly, I couldn't see the tide on. He had tide on for me. It was so tiny, you know. But Carolyn, I am not kidding you. I was catching a fish every other cast and getting a hit about every cast. It was incredible. I'm going, man, I can't even believe a trout can see that thing, you know. And it was about a 300-yard stretch. So that was a case where a very unusual looking fly, I can't remember the name of the thing, but worked like a charm. I wouldn't have chosen that fly in 1,000 years. You know, I'd have just been out of luck.
Mainly because you don't have it in your fly box.
I do now.
okay, all right.
Well, Carolyn, if you remember Daryl Bentley, who worked for me for a while before he passed away, used to tie down at Sawbug Roundup all the time. He used to tie things so tiny, I would say, Daryl, I can't even see the hook.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. I know. I hear you.
He would walk over to my hook wall and say, don't you have anything smaller than 24?
Yeah. You got some of those 30s and 32s?
Oh, I have a few 32s that I use on some of my custom rods, but heck, I can't even hardly see those.
That's about the size of the dot at the end of a sentence.
Really is.
teeny
and,
tiny.
I mean, that's, yeah.
Now, guys, that tie those, are they?
I can't tie those on.
Well, I couldn't think about it. Well, I couldn't tie it or tie it on either one. But are they tying those things under magnifying glasses?
I would hope so. If they're not, they have much better eyesight than the average person because they are small.
Boy, they are tiny, and that's for sure.
The worst thing is trying to tie them onto your tippet.
Oh, yeah, you've got to use 7 or 8X in order to get that tippet through the eye. Well, Carolyn, I tell you what, this segment has already flown by, and we've got to pay a few bills here, but we will be right back with Carolyn Parker.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment of our show is brought to you by Colton Steakhouse and Grill in Rolla, where we know what's at stake. Also by Trout & Son, serving you with boats, motors, trailers, and accessories since 1972. Located on County Road 1000 in St. James. It's always fun at Trout & Son's. Welcome back, Carolyn Parker.
Thank you.
What have you got going on in your shop down there these days?
Oh, gosh. Well, of course, lots of trips out and lots of schools. We're running lots of schools right now. 1 day and 2 day fly fishing schools. So other than that, the same old, but no. We're gearing up for our ladies and other ladies get together in November of our club.
You know, I was going to ask you about that because, and you mentioned the schools. I would think you would see an uptick in the number of women attending those.
You know, yes, we are, but we've always had women-only schools, not being sexist, but we have, and they almost always fill up.
Yeah, you know, I'm noticing more and more women coming in my shop all the time looking for entry-level rods, waders, boots, you know, everything it takes to really get started fishing these streams down here in the Ozarks.
Isn't that great?
Yes, it is. I really think so. I think it adds a lot to the sport, and I think it's wonderful that husbands have their wives available to enjoy the sport with them.
Well, and I find that to be a lot of the schools that we have, it is husbands and wives. And either they're, you know, getting ready to retire or they want to find something. This has been on their bucket list. And they'll come in together so they can learn together. And now they've got something they can share.
Well, Carolyn, often I see people waiting to their retirement years to pick up fly fishing. You know, they've seen it on TV and the sports shows and all that sort of thing. And they're intrigued by it. But they're still, even today, seems to be, I don't know, an air to fly fishing that still intimidates a lot of people. Are we gaining any ground on that aspect of fly fishing?
I think so. You know, just from education, little blips, you know, I put out a lot of little blips in my little thing. I know not everybody reads them, but, you know, how easy fly fishing is. And it's not a muscle sport. It's a finesse sport, and it's really easy to learn. And I think once a person picks up a fly rod and somebody gives them 5 or 10 minutes of help, they'll go, oh, this isn't as bad as I thought. It's just one of those things that they, you know, they've never really looked at it or understood it. And once they get a basic understanding, they go, yeah, it's not that tough.
And I think you're absolutely correct about that, Carolyn. And what I say all the time is I think most new people tend to overthink the sport, period.
They do. They do. They really, really do.
Well, Carolyn, I think something that you could do personally that would help, if you just put photos up of yourself fly fishing in that tiny little frame of yours, you know. show how graceful and smooth you are. Little videos would go a long ways, I think, in reducing that intimidation factor. Because you're a small little lady, and you wield a mean fly rod from what I hear.
She's one heck of a fly caster, I'll say this for her, yeah.
You just get down here and take some videos.
I'll do that. You're on.
Oh, boy.
Just don't snag me in the ears. I got lots of holes in my ears already.
Hey. Don't worry. I'll debar my hooks.
Oh, there you go. Oh, yeah. That sounds less painful, at least going in.
Hey, Carolyn, One of the things I wanted to bring up, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your ladies' fly fishing club there?
Well, as you know from the earlier conversations, we started out 10 years ago with 12 women after our event that we had in April. And subsequent to that, you know, other things that we've been doing, we are now over 200 ladies strong.
Wow.
And fishing is our mission. We don't have organized meetings per se. All we do is we structure four different fishing events during the course of the year. They can be anything for fishing for trout, to go into bluegill fishing, to go on bass fishing. We don't care. We're not picky.
I'm sure they're as much a social event as they are a fishing event, too, aren't they?
We fish hard one day when we're all together. Now, like in November, if you guys want to see a sight, you come down here in November. I think our get-together in November is the 9th, and that evening, in the afternoon of the 9th, around 5 o'clock, all the gals gather at the shop, and we do a meet and greet, and we just sit around and, you know, catch up on, you know, haven't seen you for a while, what's going on, stuff like that. And individually we'll go to dinner, and then we get up Saturday morning, and we'll have breakfast, and they hit the water about 9 o'clock, and those ladies don't come off the water until 5. I mean, we're fishing. Six of the gals in the group, including G and I, of course, are running Western-style drift boats. So if the water's running, not a problem. We just load a couple gals in our boats. We take off and fish and do our thing. Or we go up on the big lake and hit the banks and fish for bluegill, whatever we can do. But it's a cool mentoring group because some of the gals have just gotten started. Some of the gals have been fishing forever. So we work with each other, learning new ways to do stuff, helping each other master casting, master rigging, master whatever it is they need to figure out to make them a better fly fisher, and have an evening dinner, get up the next day, and some of them will go home and we may fish some more. But it's mainly been a great network of women getting together to have somebody to go fishing with and be comfortable.
And, you know, I think that's what's really wonderful about groups like that. I know we have the Ruby Doo fly fishers in our shop once every quarter for a fly tying event. And it's just a good social group, but it's a good learning experience, too, for people who are just getting into tying flies. And I think there's a lot of friendships that have formed out of that and a lot of bonding, if you will.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I mean, some of these gals in this club, they've been to Belize together, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And headed off to Montana and go fishing. But it's, you know, and they're serious fly fishers. They're probably, in some cases, as serious or more serious than some of the fellas. And they hit the water and they hit it hard.
I think women probably learn this, pick it up quicker than men do.
Oh, now, come on.
I'm not going to comment on that, but I agree.
No, I'm
Jerry's
serious.
Trying to stir it up now.
I'm serious.
He opened that one up, didn't he?
Oh, that is true. Women pay better attention. But, Carolyn, we were talking about the intimidation factor earlier. I would assume that this is a tremendous tool, getting these ladies together and to reduce the intimidation factor, because a lady teaching a lady is going to go over a lot smoother than Jerry or I trying to teach a lady to fly fish, I think. And that's probably one of the key reasons you created the group, is it not?
Yes, it is, because, yeah, it's not intimidation, but, yeah, men are from, what, women are from Venus, men are from Mars, was the deal there?
Yeah.
different things. We hear and react to different things differently a little bit. You know, some of the words that we can hear, some of the things that we can come up with for, you know, technique, we can relate a little bit easier to a woman because some of the things that we do. You know, one of my favorite things for the forecast is a paintbrush, slapping the paint off the paintbrush. Well, not all women have flipped a paintbrush, but, you know, we can come up with something else that helps them. So it is easier, I think, for a woman to learn from a woman in most cases, not all cases. I mean, there's some great guy teachers out there that women can do great with, but I just think most of the time ladies are a lot more comfortable in that environment. Even guide trips, we found that, you know, with Gina and I both guiding, we have a lot of ladies now that will come out and go on a guide trip because there's issues, you know, ladies, it's a lot easier to work with ladies than a man sometimes as a guide. especially if we're out in the wild. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I understand what you're saying there. But I do. I think women just pick up on things like that. They listen a little better than a man does in a lot of cases, because I've seen it where, well, I already know how to do that, and really they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you've painted a graceful picture in my mind, Carolyn, when you were talking about, you know, you're rowing that drift boat and having a couple lady fly fishers in a boat with you. I got to ask you, do the guys stare when you come drifting by, three ladies in a boat? I mean, that's not something you see every day.
No, some of them do, and some of them, especially here, because it is getting so common, unless they're from out of the area. You know, guys are getting pretty used to seeing us gals out in the river all the time, especially with other ladies now.
So you made a place for yourself on Taneycomo then, being accepted.
We're leaving an impression here. All the ladies are leaving an impression here.
I bet you are. Good positive.
It'll be a good one.
Positive impression as well. But anyway, I had that image stuck in my head. I got to get down there and sneak around and photograph and video a little bit.
And you ought to see her row that drift boat as well.
I'd love to.
You guys just need to get down here in November.
Yeah.
A bunch of women.
I just
we'll give you a brownie.
Sounds dangerous.
Oh, no.
Carolyn, I tell you what, this segment's really flying by as well. You want to tell our listeners how to get in touch with you and get more information on your services as well as your club?
Well, I'd love to. They can call us at our shop, which is area code 417-332-0460. We have a website, riverrunoutfitters.com, all one word, that you can go out to our site and get some information. Or if you want to email us, this one's hard, rvrrunoutf@aol.com. And we'll be more than happy to share information about our shop and definitely about our ladies' club.
You lost me several characters ago, you know.
on that one, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Another one they can do that's probably easier, just send it to shop@riverrunoutfitters.com.
Well, Carolyn, we're just about out of time here, girl, but I tell you what, it's always a pleasure to have you on here. I think Bill's got something he wants to ask you.
Hey, don't want to ask you. I just want to thank you, Carolyn, for being on a show with us once again. It's always fun talking to you. You're always full of good and new information, and we're getting ready to, go on break here once again, but Carolyn, don't catch them all. Leave some for us, okay?
Oh, don't worry. We put them back. Thank you guys for having us, and really, come and join us.
Will do. Coming up in segment 7, it's time for Tommy. As Tommy Bench it is, we'll be right back. I'm Bill Cooper.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source of information from the Ozarks and a few points beyond. This segment is brought to you by Gar Trucking Equipment and the Outdoor Superstore, your Husqvarna dealer located on the North Outer Road in St. James, and the Missouri Trappers Association, dedicated to preserving the heritage and skills of trapping. Hey, it's time for Tommy. You know that Tommy Bench, don't you, Jerry?
Oh, absolutely. I tell you what, he's the guru when it comes to smallmouth, isn't he?
Oh, he certainly is, particularly on the Upper Gasconade, and he should be. He grew up there. I bet that kid fished more than he did anything else.
Yeah, probably didn't skip school a lot just to go fishing.
I've heard that few stories like that about him. But, hey, the way he catches fish, I think it's all worth it. Tommy, did you get any rain over there, buddy?
Finally, we finally did. I'm so happy. It feels like God has looked down on us for sure.
Well, I'm glad I've worn the bottoms of my feet out doing a rain dance for you guys.
Oh, I appreciate it. It really worked. Whatever you did, do it some more. I'd like to have about 3 more inches.
How much do you think you got it on the Upper Gasconade?
About 1.5 inches. I think we got about 1.5 inches of rain. Like I said, I'd like to have about 4 or 5. Just, it's so dry that that ground's going to soak up the majority of it. Where it's coming up a little bit, but not near enough. You know, I'd like to see it about that magical 2.5 foot mark there at Hazel Green.
Well, I think isn't a good old weatherman saying we should get more rain over the next couple of days?
All right, that's what he says. But you know how our Ozark weather goes. Just wait an hour and it'll change. So you just never know. You can't ever catch a chicken before they hatch.
Yeah, that's true. But we can certainly be wishful, you know.
Yeah, and I'm definitely wishful and thankful when we get it too. So.
Oh, absolutely. I know. Boy, I just want to get some more rain so when I come back up there to fish with you again, I don't have to drag that canoe the first 75 yards.
Exactly. I
wore the bottom of my canoe out.
Wait. I'm excited about getting some more water in that river. I mean, it just makes the fishing better too. You know, whenever you get that good flow and you don't have to drag. So there's just so many positives and very little negatives to that water being filling that river up.
Well,
so.
Honestly, if I was going to get to fish with you again, I'd drag my canoe 75 yards again. we just had a great, great time up there. And that Upper Gasconade is so beautiful, man. And one of the things that makes it so beautiful, other than, you know, the natural scenery, the bluffs, the twists, the turns, all the wildlife you see, there's just very few people that fish up there. It's fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah, you won't see a soul. I mean, you and I and Milo went on the that stretch. I don't think we seen a single person that day, did we?
No, looking at you two was bad enough. I was hoping I'd been running into anybody else.
Yeah, had to stare at our ugly faces all day. But it was,
they were happy faces, though. Happy faces.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we were definitely happy. We were catching fish, and we had a very, very special breakfast on the Gravel Bar Gourmet.
That was
pretty special. That'll be something I'll always remember.
Oh, it was so much fun. I do enjoy cooking for folks, but I think I've been one-upped. You know, I thought I was a pretty good cook, but I've been spending some time with CNR Outfitters over on the Kansas line, and this lady, oh my gosh, Jerry, you wouldn't believe the things this lady could
cook.
I
saw some of your Facebook postings, and that it really looked good.
Make you want to eat the posting,
yeah,
doesn't
really.
It? I mean, I'm talking about all kinds of poppers, and I keep gaining weight. I keep telling her that if she keep this up, all of us guys over there are not going to be able to climb up in our tree stands when deer season hits.
Yeah, we'll reach the maximum capacity, won't we? I'll say.
Yeah,
it's too much weight.
Absolutely. But food's always good on the river. I don't care if it's just snacks. I always encourage people to carry good foods. But when you can stop and take time and cook a real meal right on the riverbanks, I'm telling you, it really gets you relaxed, Jerry. You can kick back. Boy. And of course, those young guys, Tommy and Milo, full of energy. They take their vitamin D for sure. And some others go with it. Yeah. They got lots of energy. Man, but it was so much fun just to drift along behind them, listen to them laugh, and watch them catch fish and pick on me. Because he's going to tell why now.
And just like in your latest video you just put out, which was amazing, by the way. But, you know, you're exactly right. Milo and I, you know, truly created a long-lasting friendship there. We really bonded well. And had a great time. I thought he was one of the best personalities I could have possibly been in the same boat with. So it was.
Well, he's an analyzer. He's a deep thinker. And he's a millennial, Jerry.
Oh, really?
And a great young outdoor writer doing a terrific job. But he's one of the rare ones these days that has a deep passion for the outdoors.
He's a unicorn in that millennial generation is what he is.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there, but believe me, he was analyzing you at every angle and trying to figure out what you were doing and why you were doing it and why you did it when. And he's written some tremendous articles about you already, and I'm sure there's more to come.
Oh, I'm sure there is. I can't wait to see what his perspective on things that day. And actually, him and I are getting ready to go on a trip. I don't know if I'll say it yet, but basically we've been talking to each other and we're going to go on a trip. Well, you're familiar with it. I'll just go ahead and tell you. It doesn't matter. He'll tell me. I don't think he cares if I tell it anyway. But on Lake Taneycomo, he's going to take me down there.
Awesome.
And he knows that that water so well, and I think him and I, we're going to plan a trip together and go down there and spend the day.
That's awesome, because he does know Tainted Como very well, and that boy's caught some very nice fish down there. And his cohort, Tyler Mahoney's been down there quite often posting some big rainbows. He caught his personal best the other day, but I can't remember how many pounds. But it was a big, big rainbow and just beautifully colored, because those fish that stay in there for a while, they got so much food to eat. They're fat.
Oh, it's unlimited. It's unlimited supply of food. The food source there is incredible. And just from what I've heard, I've never been there, but from reading articles like, you know, from great writers like yourself and all the other writers out there, from reading about that place and hearing about it just from hearsay talk and people fishing tournaments, it's just an incredible fishery. And the bass there are supposed to be second to none of our, in our state.
There's some surprise things in Tainted Como, because Tainted Como is such a weird lake. It's more like a river, and it changes dramatically according to water flow. We were just talking about that in a previous section with Carolyn Parker down there, who, you love this little lady, Jerry does. She's a tiny little thing, and I shouldn't tell her age, but she's way up there like us, you know, and she runs a drip boat, paddles that drip boat, and, you know, guides a couple people at a time, especially ladies. It just does a tremendous job on the river there. So you can catch the rainbows, you can catch the largemouth, the spotted bass. You get further on down the river, you can also get into white bass and walleye.
Wow.
Lots of good fishing there. So don't let Milo hold back on you, you know, if you get bored and want to catch something else, because the rainbows are going to wear you out, and there's a possibility of some big browns, Jerry, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I was going to tell Tommy, I've fished that lake a number of times, and boy, there's some awesome rainbow and browns in it too.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to target. I know for a fact that our goal is to target the really big rainbows and browns, and I'd love to catch a big brown. I've not had the fortune of catching a big trout in general. I've only been trout fishing just a handful of times in my life. So this is going to be quite a treat for me.
Oh, it's going to be a great, great adventure. And you couldn't go with a better guy. And I don't know if he'll use one of the guides down there. I know he's good buddies with some of them, you know. You know how riders are. They suck up pretty good. They get in with the best guys that know the most.
Let me make things happen. Let me ask you this, Tommy. Are you going to spin cast or are you going to fly fish down there?
Maybe both, but as of right now, tentatively, I think we're going to spin cast of some sort. It may not even be spinning. He was talking about maybe throwing some casting gear, actually, which is, I don't know. I don't know, but it's probably going to be spinning and maybe fly both, because I have a fly rod as well. So we're just going to do whatever he suggests, I'm going to follow suit.
Well, if you're throwing a fly rod there, be sure and try some nice streamers.
Okay. Yeah, I sure will. I appreciate the advice too.
Yeah, anything that looks like a bait fish to those trout, you know, they're used to seeing shad coming over that dam, and anything that looks like a bait fish, they're hungry for.
You betcha. And they, so many fish in that stream. The Missouri Department of Conservation just does a superb job of keeping it stocked. And I know they're serving the tourists that come into Branson, but, hey, I think it's a great thing. You got that many people coming into a small area. They're always looking for something new to do. And a lot of people, Jerry, you know this better than I, that a lot of people are coming to Branson. They're going on their very first fishing trip.
Yeah, in some cases, that's true.
Yeah, and the guides are really attuned to the tourists down there. And, well, they make sure that kids, grandma, grandpa, everybody can catch fish.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of good guides in there. Of course, I know the fly guides, you know, Carolyn Parker and her crew, Jeremy Hunt and Lisa Ballou down there. They're just really good guides. And there's others I didn't mention, but those are the ones I'm most familiar with.
Yeah, and lots of guides down there. And, of course, they are very good. I've been with a number of them, and it's always fun to see how the differences in the individual guides, but the guys that are catering to the tourists are just so patient and love to make sure that everybody is.
Well, they have to be.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're getting a newbie, several newbies on the boat, you got to be good, and you got got to pay attention. Well, Tommy, buddy, we're going to take a short break here. And don't go away, though. We want to continue. I understand you got a tremendous story that you're going to tell us about a big fish. Imagine that, Jerry.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I can't imagine Tommy Ditch telling a big fish story. And I hope it's not like mine about the one that got away. You know,
it's not. It'll be a great one. Everyone,
you must have been screaming, get it in the boat. Get it in the boat.
Oh, yeah. You know me. That's my quote. Get it in the boat. But you'll understand why. You'll understand, you know, the whole story. It's an amazing story. Right. You can't miss it.
All right. Well, hang on. We'll be right back. And we'll be back real soon, people, with segment 8, more of Tommy Bench. And he's got a big fish story to tell. I'm Bill Cooper.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back. I'm Bill Cooper, and you're listening to Wild at Heart. This segment of our show is brought to you by Salty Jack's Bar and Grill in Eminence, located on the crystal clear Jack's Fork River, and by State Farm Insurance agent Michelle Beckett and Sullivan, helping life go right. Well, we've got Tommy Bench on the line. He's quite a talker when it comes to the Gasconade, and he's going to learn something new, Jerry. Isn't that great?
Yeah, trout fishing.
You bet. now you know what's going to happen, don't you? We're going to have to listen to him rant and rave about two types of fishing.
Yeah.
Trout fishing and smallmouth
fishing. The fish stories will get bigger now, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they will. But we got a question here. John Francis is always coming up with questions. We talk sometimes and kind of assume that people know what we're talking about. But John wants you to describe, Tommy, what the upper Gasconade is. What portion of the river is that from where to where?
Well, it's funny you asked that. I was just looking up today about the upper and the lower Gasconade. Basically, the upper Gasconade is where it starts in right about in Texas County, around where Hartville, and then where it exits Pulaski County, give or take around the, we'll say the Ruby-Doo dumps in right there in Waynesville. And basically, Pulaski County is the deadline with a cutoff. Once it leaves Pulaski County, that's when it starts the lower stretches of the Gasconade. So we'll just refer it that way. Is when, you know, once it exits Pulaski County, you're now in the lower Gasconade as to the upper Gasconade.
I got you. But I've said this before. I used to fish the upper Gasconade with Vern Clemens here from Rolla, Missouri, who was a tremendous angler. He ran a UPS route over there, knew all the farmers and everybody. He could put in on the river anywhere he wanted to, I think. But that guy could catch fish. But, Tommy, I saw a grand picture of you and your sidekick. I guess you guys did pretty well in a tournament this last weekend. And where was that tournament held?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Believe it or not, it is not the Gasconade. It was actually the Osage River, in which I don't have a ton of experience there. Basically, I'm just fishing that Osage River section because the tournament trail I fish in, which you're very familiar with, Jeff Feeler runs it, the Gasco Osage Buddy Bassmasters, and I fished it for, this is be my third year fishing it full-time, and I've never fished the whole series. We've always missed a couple tournaments. And I told Seth, I said, hey, before we start the season, I said, all I want, my number one goal, because 2016, we done so well. I mean, we won like five or six tournaments out of the eight that we fished. But we didn't fish every points tournament. So in the end, there was no end result to the success we had. So I told him, I said, my one main goal is to win this championship. That's all I care about. I want to fish every point tournament to at least give ourselves a chance to win this points tournament or championship. And so he said, okay, let's do it. So anyway, so now we're fishing the Osage River. We're in number six. Was it five or six? Number five of six, I think, of the points championship on the Osage River, St. Thomas. And we put in and we run up as far as we can. And just to give you, try to paint a picture for you. You know, this is what we're doing. We're just trying to catch a good limit. We're trying to we're competing just like we always do. We're competitors. And so we're fishing along. We're catching fish. It starts a little slow. We get a limit a couple hours in. Now we have a small limit. We're trying to upgrade. And then I lose a nice 2.5 pounder.
Oh, you lost the fish. Don't make fun of me anymore.
I lost the fish.
Why didn't you? Hey, why didn't you put it in the boat?
I tried to get in the boat.
Yeah,
but
I wasn't even trying, was I? I was trying to hang on to a fish, Jerry, so they could get up there, and I was going to take pictures of them with it. You know, I could have put it in the boat and done that, but I failed to do so.
If you wanted that fish in the boat, you would have got it in the boat. You were just kind of messing around a little bit. So before I run out of time, I want to get the story. You got to hear the story. This is an amazing story that will be talked about. At least amongst Seth and I, for sure, for years and years and years to come. I'm telling you, you got to hear the story. So we're fishing, and I set the hook. I'm going over some brush, and I set the hook on a fish. I almost thought it was brush. Well, I get him right next to the boat. He comes up, slashes around, and comes off. We see the whole fish. We both look at each other. Dadgummit, you know, that was a 2.5 to 3 pounder. That was a good fish. We needed that one. Well, we lost it. So then we're going along. Seth is fishing his most famous bait that everyone knows him for, a trick worm. He's so famous for that trick worm, he got the nickname Trick Worm Turner. And that is no joke. Ask him about it. Trick Worm Turner.
Oh, he's good with it. He's labeled. He's labeled for sure.
He's labeled Trick Worm Turner. So he can he can throw that thing like none other, too. He's throwing that thing around. As we're going upriver, we find out the water was clear. He goes, oh, man, I could throw my trick worm because it really shines in clear water. So he's throwing it. He sees the fish bite it. He sets the hook, and he goes, oh, it come off. How did I miss that fish? Well, he pulls the bait in, and his worm is ripped in half. It literally probably bit it right behind the hook. Never had the hook in his mouth. So continue on. We go upriver. We shake that off. I said, we got to go back to that spot. We got to go back to that spot and try it again. He goes, oh, we will. So we fish. Now here it is rolling on 12, 15, 12, 20. We head back to that spot to finish the day. We're a 45-minute run from the ramp. We've got to start heading back. Tournament's over at 2 o'clock, so we thought. So we get back to that spot, nothing happening. We go about 50 or 60 yards down on a laydown. Seth takes that trick worm and he throws it out. And as soon as he throws it out, I'm right behind him. I've got a trick worm on now this time because he's really catching the fish on it. So I throw it out there, and I hear, oh, my gosh, a giant. And so I drop my pole, I grab the net, and this fish jumps. And as soon as it jumps, I knew it. I looked at him, and I said, that's a 5 or 6 pounder. And it hit. It went back in the water. He starts stripping drag out to loosen his drag to where he doesn't break off. And he's please don't go in the brush. Please don't go in the brush. Well, you know what happened. It went in the brush. That's what any big fish does.
Exactly. A big fish,
yep. He's got light line, light tackle. He's using spinning gear with real light line. He's got – here's what saved him. Here's what saved us right there is that he had braid on with a leader. So he had braid on with a 10-pound leader, I think is what he had, or maybe 8. Some lighter line. It may have been less than that. Either way, it gets hung up in the brush. And this fish is huge. This is everything. Like I said, this is a make or break tournament because we're not real familiar with the Osage River, and both of us do really well in the Gasconade. We're on the Gasconade, we do really well. We're usually in the top 3, top 5 at minimum. We're competitive almost every tournament. So he gets it hung up in the brush. This is a giant fish. So we troll over there to get it hung loose. He goes, I don't know where it's at. Where's it at? How did it get hung up? It's hung up everywhere. We can't find this fish. We're looking around. I've got the net in my hand just waiting for it to jump because I know it's got to be close. It can't be very far from where it's hung up. We see where it's hung up, but it's wrapped around 10 different ways. And it's coming down to where now 2 minutes have passed by.
You remind me of Jack Buck.
Jack Buck?
Yeah.
Do I? Wait, we're in Cardinals. A frenzy here.
Yeah.
We're in a frenzy trying to figure out what's going on and where this fish is at. And the thing about it is, it keeps us going because as it's hung up, all of a sudden it starts ripping drag through all the brush. It's hung up 5-10 different ways, but it's pulling out, and we feel it pulling. You see the line stripping through the brush, but we have no clue where the fish is at. We think it's over here on the left, but could it be behind us? Could it be underneath? We don't know where it's at. And at this point, it's like, what do we do? Now it's winding down to where we've got to do something. We've got to make a decision. And Seth is almost, I can see on his face, he's almost like, man, I don't know what to do. There's nothing left. It's almost like he was just about ready to just break his line and retie and keep fishing because we just couldn't sit there forever. And at a corner of his eye, he goes, I think I seen something over there on the right-hand side. So Now there's no movement. There's been no movement for at least 30, 45 seconds, maybe a minute. Long time for when you're fighting a fish. And so we see a worm, and it's a pink worm. And he's like, I was like, grab that whopper plopper, reel down, and go down there and see if we can snag the line. So he grabs another pole. I got his pole now at this point, or he drops the pole. I'm reaching down. He grabs the line, snags it with a whopper plopper, somehow finds the line, pulls it up. I grab the line, and I was like, what do we got to lose, man? At least if we find that line and pull it in, then either there's a fish on it or it's gone. At least we'll know. But we can't leave unless we know for sure. And so I grab the line, and I start pulling it, and there's nothing. I'm like, man, this fish is gone, or it broke us off. And then just when I think all faith is lost, I feel two big tugs, pull, pull. And I said, get the net. He's on there. And I hand line him all the way into the boat and said, net's him.
You caught that fish? You got that fish?
Got that fish. He was about 8 or 10 foot away from where he was hung up by the bank. We never even knew it. He was hunkered up underneath the log where the log kept going up by the bank.
Oh, so it all sounds like a fish story to me.
I'm telling you.
Great story, Tommy. Man, and I hate to cut you off, but we're down to the wire here, and I've got a closeout here to read. But, hey, stay on the line. I'll talk to you some more after I'm done here. But great story, Tommy.
All right.
Wild at Heart is heard every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 6 with a repeat Sunday morning from 8 to 10. The show is produced in the studios of ESPN 107.3 in Rolla and engineered by John Francis. We'd like to thank our guests today, guests Randy McPherson, Kenny Keezer, Carol Parker, Tommy Bench, and Ray I. Ray comes to us each week from I Only Outdoors, 590 The Fan. Don't forget, you can always listen to a podcast of this show. Just go to our website at ESPN1073.com, click Programming, and Wild at Heart. I'm Bill Cooper from Jerry Cook and John Francis. Hey, it was a good time today, boys.
It was. So
I had some great talent on the show.
Yeah.
I've laughed and laughed and laughed, but it's good for the soul, and so is fishing. Absolutely. I'm Bill Cooper, and this is Wild at Heart. We'll see you next week.
Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3, powered by Cowtown USA, Colden Steakhouse and Grill, J. Cook Fly Rods, The Outdoor Superstore, Shady Lanes Cabins and Motel, Advanced Performance Shooting, Missouri Trappers Association, Living the Dream Outdoor Properties, and State Farm agent Michelle Beckett. The latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. Wild at Heart, 4 p.m. Wednesdays and 8 a.m. on Sundays on ESPN 107.3.